Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Gukesh is obviously the real world champion because he won the real world championship.
I heard a story that he actually booked his after party before the match was over.
I mean, if this is the total world championship, then what is the world championship?
Welcome back, everybody, to another week and another episode of the C-Squared podcast. The last time we chatted was, in fact, in St. Louis in person. Fabiano, as we were getting ready for the start of Clutch Chess, which was quite a fun and exciting tournament. And you got second place, made quite a lot of money, made a pretty penny. Congratulations. Magnus made a pretty penny, as actually everybody left St. Louis with a smile on their faces. But obviously, from your perspective, how was that tournament? Did you enjoy it? And did you enjoy the format as well? Give us a rundown of what happened in St. Louis.
I did enjoy it, with the caveat that I was really tired. So it made me enjoy it in some sense because I just didn't put too much pressure on myself. On the other hand, I was kind of done playing. I was already ready to take a break. You know, playing like two big events back to back was plenty for me. You know, it's especially pretty tough events. So the knockout format, the long classical event. I like playing. I really do like playing in general. But of course, at some point you want to take a bit of a break. So okay, to have this as my last event because it was sort of I wouldn't call it exhibition. It was a normal tournament, but it was, you know, one a bit more experimental. So I guess we could kind of be a bit more chill about it. It wasn't like we're playing the world championship or something like that. It was a unique scoring system, so you could, like, honestly, you could play like shit and then just have a great third day and win the tournament.
Oh, I didn't see you there. You might be wondering, what am I doing here? Well, I'm getting my reps in.
You know, one of the most common questions I get is, how do you actually learn a new opening? Honestly, the best way, hands down, is by using chessreps.com. They've got these super fun, interactive opening courses that actually work. This isn't one of those chess courses you watch once and forget. These are fully interactive courses. You're not passively listening. You're actively playing the moves, getting quizzed on variations, and building that crucial muscle memory. It feels more like a game than studying. Hundreds of thousands of players have already used chessreps.com to break through plateaus and hit their highest ever ELO. And here's the cool part. They actually want you to see how powerful this is for yourself. Right now, you can take their entire Vienna Gambit and Stafford Gambit courses completely free. You don't even have to sign up. Just head over to chessreps.com, and start learning. Right now, they have 25 courses for you, and they release a new one every single week. Seriously, this is the best way to learn openings. Go try it out at chessreps.com.
Like, that's kind of what I did on the second day. I played terribly the first day. Second day, I played well, and then suddenly I was 50%, but I was in first place. I was still behind Magnus, but like briefly I was in first place, and I think I was a point behind Magnus after the last game, and it was just the scoring system, right? So first day mattered, but not to a great extent, because each game was worth 1 point. Second day, each win is worth 2 points. Third day, each win is worth 3 points, and now draws are worth less, which meant that the third day you don't really want to draw. And also, individual games had money attached to them.
Yeah, I would say second day being playing well is somewhat of an understatement. Anytime you beat Magnus in a mini-match 2-0. And to be honest, in the first day, you had some great chances to beat him also. But obviously, that was the big breakthrough for you in the tournament. And run us through that match against Magnus. We can also start with day one, because I do think you had some chances, some good chances in day one. The level of play was definitely high. But something didn't click, perhaps in those final few moments, the final stretch of the game. Obviously, in time trouble, things can happen. And in day one, it just simply didn't click. It clicked in day two. From your perspective, what was the difference between the 2 days?
Yeah, I did get my chances on day one. I think that everyone did. But yeah, I was... okay, time trouble, mistakes. Some games I was unfocused also. I was played a little bit too cavalier. I mean, you know, I won the first game against Hikaru. It was kind of smooth, relatively uneventful. Mm-hmm. Then the second game, I wanted to play a sharp opening, so I did. I played as sort of Benoni, starting from a King's Indian, you know, transposing to Benoni. But then at some point...
And you got a good position.
Yeah, at some point stage, it went from bad to good. I did mix up the opening a bit. Then it went from bad to good, and then I was... like, I wasn't really calculating, so... and then... yeah, against Magnus, had two winning positions, objectively winning, and scored half a point out of two. At least I should score, I think, 1.5 from those positions. Okay, one draw. Like, the first game, you know, it wasn't super... I had to go trade queens. It wasn't 100% obvious in time trouble. Second game, I'm just winning a piece in one move. I mean, like, come on, it's just a... I could just win a piece in one move. So... and then against Gukesh also, okay, was built bit tilted after the Magnus second game. You know, Gukesh punished me twice. I lost two games to him on that day. I did get a small measure of revenge against him on the second day. Didn't equalize the score, but the final score against Gukesh was a -1, which I think that he played fine. He just had this disastrous score against Magnus. It totally derailed his tournament.
Besides he scored that, half a point out of six, right? Or something.
Yeah,
like
but
that.
Besides that, he actually scored plus against me. Although he probably did it in the wrong order, because he did win the games on the first day, right? So so totally, I think I actually scored the same as him. Like, it, not by traditional scoring, but by clutch scoring. But against Hikaru, he did fine. I think he scored plus against Hikaru. Or maybe 50%? Maybe I'm reading that wrong. I think 50%. But still, fine. Fell apart against Magnus. You know, I think he shows a good level. He's very strong, but somehow Magnus, he just wasn't able to get his footing against Magnus whatsoever.
Do you think there's some animosity between Magnus and Gukesh, or some extra rivalry brewing up? Obviously, Magnus is not defending the world championship anymore. Gukesh got that, and people are you know, maybe Magnus is not taking it lightly, the fact that a lot of people are thinking that Gukesh is right now the real world champion, and you know, the top contender, the top player in the world. And perhaps Magnus, whenever he plays him, wants to show that he's still the top dog. Is that how you feel it?
Well, I think that these things aren't mutually exclusive. I mean, like, Gukesh is obviously the real world champion because he won the real world championship, and he won the candidates, most importantly, to qualify for the world championship. I say most importantly because that's actually the hardest step in the whole process. Mm-hmm. Like, just objectively, qualifying to the candidates is tough. Winning the world championship is tough, but you could maybe say it's a 50-50 in many cases, right?
When Magnus was a world champion also? Would you have said the same thing when Magnus was a world champion
also? No, then I think that I wouldn't know. It would be a different type of toughness. Because, like, let's say when I played Magnus, I thought that it was a pretty close fight. I thought we were pretty evenly matched. I mean, I think I gave myself 50-50, but okay, maybe it's, you know, I have bias, obviously, so others wouldn't. But I think the tied score after Classical did suggest it's a pretty close match, right? So let's say you give me 40%. I would have less chances to win the candidates, objectively, than 40%. Mm-hmm. Especially at that time when my rating was even not among the highest players. Okay, because of a battle, I can say, but whatever. But there's 8 players. Everyone has a chance, for the most part. So what do you give the best, you know, 20% at best, if someone's really, really good?
I would have given you around 20%, yeah, as a top-rated player. I think you were the top-rated player at that
time. No, I wasn't, but it was because of Vikense.
Right. I think it was, what, Mamediarov, perhaps? He was
actually, yeah, maybe even either Mamediarov or maybe, ironically, maybe Kremnik, I'm not sure. Maybe Levon. I know people...
Yeah.
Forget, but Kremnik was a top player not too long ago. And so, okay, so let's say you give someone 20%.
20% is huge. Yeah, in a pack of 8, 20%
is huge. It's huge, especially in the candidates. Yeah. Maybe for many people, you would give them 20% against Magnus. You know, maybe less, maybe more. But still, it's just a different kind of toughness because one is like you need a bit of luck. Like in the candidates, let's say you have 20%, but actually part of that is, do things go well for you? Do you play the right guy at the right time? Like, do you play someone who's tilted? Do your openings go well in this case or that case? In the World Championship, there's basically almost no variance. Like, let's say you play Magnus, you just have to be stronger than Magnus. He may have an off day here or there, but it's going to be relatively minor. You're not going to catch him in openings. I mean, okay, we kind of did.
To play the devil's advocate, 2016, his match against Karjakin, nobody gave Karjakin a high chance. And Magnus showed in the first few games that he was clearly better, superior in every facet of the game, but he was just not getting the breakthrough. And then Karjakin got the first win of the match. He could have gotten the second one immediately after. He didn't. And then Magnus equalized, and obviously history followed after. But he was very close to defeating Magnus in that match.
Sure. I mean, okay, Magnus is definitely a better player and has always been a better player than Karjakin, which is not saying much because Magnus is Magnus. You know, Karjakin, we have to recognize that he was legitimately one of the best players in the world for many years, and he won the World Cup, and he won the candidates. And these things don't come with luck. And you say, okay, he was clearly superior. Sure, Magnus was pressing in a majority of those games. On the other hand, he didn't win. And in chess, you have 3 results. I mean, if you have all draws, then he wasn't superior in all aspects, for sure, right? Otherwise, he would have won. Karjakin was defending bad positions. I don't remember the game numbers. I think game 3 when Karjakin was white and he allowed c4 in the opening, it was a big mistake. And this one, which famously, like, there was the saying, I don't believe in fortresses, things like that. Mm-hmm. And there was some other game, I think, from the Andy Berlin with Rookie 2, Rookie 1, something like that. Magnus had a bunch of good chances, and then he got frustrated because he couldn't make them into anything tangible. And then he overpressed in one game. I think maybe it was game 8, game 9, I forget.
Nine, and then in 10, nine could have lost, and then I think 10 was the comeback.
Wasn't the comeback the penultimate? Or no, you're right. Game 10, puck comeback, then game 11, draw, and then game 12, Magnus forced a draw from the opening.
With white, forced a draw, yeah.
And went to tiebreaks. So, anyway, I think that it's part of that is also, like, the kind of narrative around that match is also underestimating or downplaying Karjagin's strengths, which were, I mean, he was super strong at the time. Of course, Magnus was a better player. Nobody can question that. But in the match, it was still relatively close. Now, probably Magnus wasn't at his very best. Fair enough. On the other hand, a lot of these things are psychology. When Jan played Magnus, of course, Magnus is also a much better player, and the match showed that in the end. On the other hand, the first five games were very close. The sixth game was very close. And if that game had ended in another result, which it could have, Nepo was actually also better in that game, much better. But he eventually lost his very famous, like, 135-move game. I commentated it live with Danny Wrench and Robert Hess. Absolutely exhausting day. We wake up at 2 in the morning, commentate 10 hours.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize, maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
But one of the greatest World Championship games, legit, like with no exaggeration, of all time.
It was a good game. Yeah.
Magnus Carlsen, he's going to shush the doubters. He's put his finger to his lips too early in certain events. And there it is. There's the handshake. And that is Magnus Carlsen taking the 3.5, 2.5 lead.
The first decisive game in more than 5 years of classical chess for the World Chess Championship.
But that was the breaking point. After that, it was psychology. After that, it was, you know, Magnus was in a good psychological point of view because he knew he just had to hold on to his lead. He was very confident about that. He was less confident about breaking through. Jan did not believe that he could actually make a comeback. That was my impression of it.
I heard a story that he actually booked his after party before the match was over. Like, he basically booked his winner's after party and he invited his friends before the match was over.
Maybe. I mean, the thing is, of course, he was very confident. And honestly, it felt like that was the game of the match. Like, that decided it. In hindsight, also at the time, it kind of felt like that. But if you look at things before that, it was very, very tight. And Magnus was in trouble in some games. And there was a lot of close calls. So to look at the match without looking at the details and why and how these things are close and the strengths of the opponent and what they could have done better is, I think, a mistake as well. So Karjagin, maybe Magnus, you know, in another timeline, he wins one of those games and then the entire match is the walkover. I mean, also could happen. But it didn't happen. And Magnus has his weaknesses as well. One of them was that he got frustrated. The psychology was actually in Karjagin's favor for a large part of the match.
Yeah, I think we went on a pretty significant historical tangent on that one. It all started with the question about beating Magnus 2-0.
It was about Gukesh.
Yes. Yeah. I think we started with Magnus, your match against Magnus, and then we went to Gukesh, and
Okay, I'll just answer, because I don't think I actually answered your question.
Yes. I don't think you did.
No, I, like, yeah. So Gukesh is the world champion.
But that was a great tangent, by the way. That was a great tangent. I really enjoyed that.
And he's the real world champion, and he deserves it. And Magnus is also stronger than him. It's two things which can both be said, and they don't detract from the other. Now, does Magnus actually, like, feel more incentive to beat Gukesh over others? I'm not 100% sure. That was my feeling at some point. I'm not 100% sure, but maybe. But I don't know how much he cares about this relatively... Like, if you think about it, their careers are not going to intersect for super long at some point.
Not long at all. Yes, not long at all.
They're intersecting...
Magnus is kind of on his way out, right? Or at least, especially in Classical. In Classical, he's one step out, more or less.
I mean, he's not on his way out because he can't participate, but because he seems to be prioritizing other things to some extent. And when I say their careers do intersect in the sense that they will play, but they're not going to be playing in the most consequential tournaments. Magnus and Gukesh are not going to be playing a world championship match because Magnus is not going to try to qualify for this world championship match. And he's also not going to be playing in the candidates for that reason. And okay, now there's this new FIDE World Championship in total whatever chess.
I was just about to ask you that because I felt we were sort of going into that direction and we didn't discuss it.
That's true. Yeah, it's actually something we should.
This is kind of a big development in the chess world, right? The total complete world championship. I don't even know the name, which is kind of bad for the brand. And it just points to the fact that the branding is perhaps not there yet. But this is the total world championship cycle, which I don't know exactly when it starts. I think 2027 is going to be Norway Chess Tour in 2026.
Sorry, 2027. Yeah, you're right.
And then 2027 is going to be the first full year, whatever that means. I don't know what that means. Perhaps a few tournaments and you know, maybe one day we will speak with the organizers as well. But from what you read about and what you've obviously... listened and spoke to other players about this new world championship cycle. What's your take on it?
Well, it's kind of, I'm very divided because on the one hand, the prize money is great. And I, of course, more events with more money for professionals.
Not bad.
Great, right? I mean, I'm reading here, 2.7 million prize pool over the year. That is like double the Grand Chess Tour, right? Something like that. The Grand Chess Tour is already significant money, very significant. And now they're doubling it for this, which is also, it's basically a Grand Chess Tour. So the money's great, you know, all for that. I just don't like the name. I don't understand the name. Like, honestly.
You just don't like... I mean, it's a... this is kind of part of the question and the debate. It's just a Grand Chess Tour, if you think about it. It's something very similar with the Grand Chess Tour for people that perhaps don't know this. The Grand Chess Tour and FIDE were very close to inking a deal that looked very similar to this one, basically giving the Grand Chess Tour a couple of candidate spots. That was, I think, maybe 2-3 years ago, I don't remember exactly when the time
something like
is
that, yeah.
blurry, but
yeah.
They were very close to doing this, exactly what Norway Chess is doing. In the end, it fell through, and it didn't happen, perhaps because of sponsors, perhaps, we don't know. These are deals that have not been inked for reasons unknown to the public. But right now, it seems like it's a Grand Chess Tour. It includes... it's not classical. It's not fully classical. It's not the 1 hour and 30 minutes plus 30 minutes after 40 moves and whatnot. It's a short classical, one that obviously meshes with the demands of Magnus very well. I believe it's 1 hour for a game. So it's a short classical. Then you have a combination of that with rapid and blitz. This is basically what the Grand Chess Tour is. You have rapid, blitz, and... the general, the classical, if you want to call it that way. So it's something very similar. Like what's new to this cycle? Is it just Magnus? Is it just that Magnus will play this particular cycle?
Yeah, I mean, it's a grand chess tour with basically the time control halved. Besides that, like, the grand chess tour is a mix of different formats, you know, rapid, blitz, classical. Magnus does play, although he doesn't play the whole thing. He hasn't for many years.
He plays one rapid tournament.
Yeah,
rapid,
yeah, he plays one. I mean, he did play in 2019, so it's not like he's new to this either. I mean, it's just that he's new to this in the last few years since he stopped playing the Grand Chess Tour, stopped playing the World Championship cycle. So is it FIDE's attempt to bring back Magnus? Of course, I don't know. I don't know the behind the scenes, although it does feel like there's an element of that, considering it's kind of in partnership with Norway Chess. Magnus gave his support. I forget what he said, but he gave some quote which was praising the idea. Which, of course, yeah, everyone wants Magnus to get back in the mix, right? Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I feel like these terms are confusing. I mean, if this is the total world championship, then what is the world championship? Because we've always had...
And that, like, brings me to the next question. Is it diluting the world championship?
Of course. I mean, of course. FIDE is endorsing an additional world championship. We already have the classical, rapid, and blitz. That covers all formats. Now you're having a total. Does that mean that all the others are just... It sounds to me, if I was from the outside, the total world championship, that's the one. And then you have these, like, side events. But, of course, for the chess people on the inside, what's going to be is that the world championship is the main one, and then the rapid blitz and the total are the side events. Like, that's how it is for people. I mean, ask anyone at the World Cup, would you rather be blitz world champion or classical world champion? 100%
of
answers.
Yeah, everybody would say classical.
Literally 100%, with no exception. And also, for most people, they probably wouldn't even, like, of course, it would be a really big deal becoming the world champion, but honestly, we kind of forget about it pretty quickly. Well, we remember all the other world champions. I mean, if you're a chess insider, you probably remember the last, like, five Blitz World Champions, maybe. You know, it's helped by the fact that Magnus is probably, like, three of them, or four of them, but like,
I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly in order. I would probably be able to tell you, okay, yes, Lanier was a Blitz World Champion, or, you know, Grishuk was a Blitz World Champion. I wouldn't be able to tell you the exact year when that happened.
Yeah,
it's not every 2 years, it's every year.
Did
Levon
win the Blitz World
the
Championship?
History.
Did Levon win the Blitz World Championship?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes. He did, right?
Yeah, he did.
No, I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah, he did, he did.
He won the rapid also.
No.
Didn't he?
He did not, no.
Hmm. You see, yeah, that's...
Yeah,
that's
yeah, you see, it's... Le Quang Liam was a Blitz World Champion. Do you remember
he
that
was,
one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lanier, yeah, yeah, I think 2008 for Lanier, but I might, maybe 2012. Yeah, I also don't remember.
I remember them because they're somewhat outliers, right? Like, you would not necessarily go into the event expecting them to win, and they're kind of the outliers that won it.
Okay, Blitz World Championship.
I remember, for example, the match, the World Championship, the Blitz, the Rapid World Championship match between Fedosev and Anand. I think it was in Dubai. You remember that?
No.
Which Anand won. And he became the world rapid champion.
But not, was it Dubai?
I think he,
2017, wasn't that like Moscow or something? Oh, no, sorry, in Riyadh.
Or Riyadh, yeah. So, yeah, but yes, again, it's vague details, yes.
I mean, the Rapid Blitz World Championship, it's great. People want to win that. It's a big accomplishment, no doubt. But obviously pales in comparison to the Classical World Championship, which we don't actually call the Classical World Championship. We just call it the World Championship. We do not call Volodar Mirzin the World Champion. And if he called himself the World Champion, we would probably think that that was, like, false advertising, right? I mean, I don't know what we Gukesh is a world champion.
Champion.
Yeah, he's a world rapid champion, right? That's what we would say. Yeah. Not obviously not to detract from his accomplishment, but just how this is how we look at it from in the chess world. Gukesh is the world champion. We don't say he's a classical world champion. Although we could use that language. It's just this is how we look at it. I mean, we have a unified title, which a unified title which we haven't always had. And there is always going to be the whole debate about who's the best player. And there's always going to be the people who say the world champion is not the best player and doesn't deserve it or whatever. Which is obviously not true, but we're always going to have that. But we still have it, and it's kind of clear. It's like the one goal that everyone looks at. Not the one, but I mean, it's the main goal that everyone looks at. And now you had a total world championship, and let's say I'm from the outside. I just started picking up chess 6 months ago. I see there's one Blitz world champion, one Rapid world champion, and one Classical world champion. And then there's this total world champion, and they're all four different people. And I don't know who is supposed to be the best among them. I can't. I have no. Who, tell me. Explain to me. Who is the best? Which is the most important? Why do I? And then I have the Fischer Rapid World Champion. Sorry, the Fischer Random World Champion. From 2022.
It happens sometimes. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes it doesn't.
Happens like every 5 years, perhaps. I mean, we don't know. Maybe it'll never happen again. So yeah, I have like five different world championships, and one is new. Three are old, and one never happens. Like, I'm going to struggle to understand who's the best player in the world. And then the best player in the world is someone else. So let's just say that Magnus doesn't win any of them. Now, unlikely, probably. He'll probably win one of them. But it's possible. I mean, it's not out of the question, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
So now I have six different people. Like, you understand
so
the confusion.
What's the vision? What's the vision? Coming from FIDE, this is what I'm curious. I understand what Norway Chess wants. They want Magnus. They will get the prestige of a world championship title. It's obvious plus for them. They will cement the tournament. They will cement the whole organization as one of the leading organizations in the world of chess, and they will have more tournaments. They were one of these spectacular events that was happening only once per year.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize, maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Had Magnus in it. Now they're going to have more of that. So obviously, plus for Norway Chess, they're the winners, the obvious winners. FIDE, on the other hand, I'm not 100% sure I see the vision. Like I understand, as an institution, FIDE, you have the world championship. Now you're diluting your own world championship title by creating a new total world champion. What's the vision? Do they just want Magnus back? Do they just hope that Magnus is going to become the total world champion and they will be able to advertise that to sponsors? Like, what is their end game?
I don't know. I think it's always a bit of a risk. Now, we had this earlier in the year because of freestyle and the world championship. And one of their big things, which I said, although I'm not sure the way they went about it was best, but their essential point that we have to protect the world championship because it is our main product. I mean, they probably didn't say it exactly this way, but it's our main product, and it's kind of precious in that sense. Like, people tune in to watch the World Championship because it's the World Championship, not because they want not because they necessarily care about the players. People watched Jan and Ding play. People watched Ding and Kukesh play. People watched Magnus play. People watched without Magnus or without Ding or without Kukesh. It doesn't matter because the World Championship is the World Championship, and people will watch that. So they wanted to protect that, and they didn't want Freestyle to come in and make a Freestyle World Championship. Fair enough. But this actually goes counter to that. It doesn't make sense if they consider that a precious asset.
Well,
and brand.
Just to add a single caveat to that, they were willing to do it if Freestyle paid them enough money. Now it seems like Norway Chess and whoever their sponsors are will pay enough money. Was it only about money? Is the question.
I mean, everything is always about money. It's everything is about money when it comes down to it. But
yeah.
Again, that's what I said at the start. The money, of course, makes it a good thing in many ways. On the other hand, I think that like players will gravitate towards this because there's good money, and nobody wants to pass up a good financial opportunity. But if I look at it outside of my own personal interests in terms of making cash, then is it good when we don't really have any sort of unified system? We're just going to have like five different cycles, and then the Grand Chess Tour and the Freestyle Tour. And it's actually like a lot of chess, but people are no longer... Okay, just like the way it used to be. Even before I was playing chess, when I don't really have much of an idea of it, but if you look at like what people said, what they were doing, it's like, okay, you're a top player, your goal, your singular goal is going towards a world championship, and you work towards that goal, and you base your career on if you can achieve that or not. And now I think that mostly people are going to be not going towards a specific goal, but just, okay, making money. A lot of different tournaments, a lot of different cycles, making a lot of money, which is also fine. But I do think we lose out on that. And also the sport, if it doesn't have a very consistent schedule, it's also confusing to the people watching. Like in other sports, you kind of have the things that people tune into because those are the things to watch, right? Whether it's basketball or tennis or football, people watch these events year in, year out. The events don't just suddenly change. The format doesn't change. You don't suddenly have 8 Grand Slams and then 2 Grand Slams. I guess things do change sometimes. But like fundamentally, things don't change too much. And now in chess, it's actually changing every single month, if you think about it. Yes. I mean, Freestyle got outed, a big tour of tournaments. Then next year, Total World Championship gets added. And then this and that, and the Grand Chess Tour gets added or doesn't get added. Suddenly there's a live final. Like, everything just gets changed constantly. So what people watch in chess is actually difficult, I think, for people who are just starting out watching. They're like, what is going on? I mean, I'm watching the World Cup. Is that the World Championship? No, the World Cup qualifies to the candidates. Okay, so the candidates qualifies to the World Championship. But then there's the Total World Championship. But that also qualifies to the candidates, which qualifies to the World Championship. And then at the end of the year, we have the World Rapid and Blitz Championship. That doesn't qualify to the candidates. And then we have the Grand Chess Tour. Like, I mean, honestly, even the World Cup is already confusing language. I mean, the World Cup shouldn't be called the World Cup. I don't know. It sounds too much like the World Championship. But it's just a qualification to the World Championship.
Yeah.
But at one point, it was the World Championship. The FIDE World Championship, and the last one that was won by Rustam Kazımjanov in 2004, was later called the World Cup. It was the same format, but it was the World Championship in 2004, and then when Levon won in 2005, it was the World Cup, which was a qualification to the candidates. I mean, you have to admit that like these things become very arbitrary, and if we start changing things every month, every year, then it all is very arbitrary.
Yeah. Again, we have a bigger audience than we've probably ever had in the world of chess, but it's also a confused audience because we have so many tournaments. I think Vidit had a great, I don't know what it was, maybe a YouTube Shorts, a reel, whatever it was. You probably saw it. It was a comedic genius by Vidit, kind of trying to explain what's happening with all the world championships. If you don't know it, maybe we'll link it somewhere. Maybe we'll show it edited here. But it was quite funny. Now, speaking of the World Cup, I think we've talked about the new world championship. We've talked about Clash Chess, and we do have the World Cup as a big tournament happening right now. And we're entering this discussion already as we are setting up for the third round. We still have the tiebreaks in some matches, but we're at the tiebreak stage after the second round. November 5th is when we're recording this one. So a lot of things have happened. Obviously, you already prefaced it. The top three qualify to the candidates. So a lot at stake. A lot of the players that have missed on the candidate spots are trying to make it on the final stretch. And we already have some big surprises. We're going to go through the bracket and kind of discuss it. And maybe we can give our dream bracket scenario as well. Prediction as well. So let me just share the screen with you, Fabi. I do have a nice little bracket ready for you. Boom. Boom. Do you see my beautiful bracket, Fabi?
Oh, it's very tiny, so I can't see the names, but I do see the bracket.
You see the bracket. Excellent.
Well, yeah, I just can't see the names on it, so it's not very helpful in that sense.
I don't know why you cannot see it, but perhaps you can also check it yourself on chess.com. We're not doing any advertisement, but it is
okay, I'm going to use
chess.com.
I'm going to use Wikipedia instead. Advertising Wikipedia.
You're going to use okay, Wikipedia. You should try Grokipedia. All right, round one. A lot of the players played bye. Whenever you play the bye, it means you're going to automatically go to the next round. Gukesh played bye. Sargis, plenty of players played bye. We're not going to go through all the names.
Yeah, bye is a terrible player.
He's pretty bad. Some surprises in round one. From your perspective?
Not really. Like, okay, round one. Like, okay, I'll just say this, preface this by saying the World Cup is my favorite event to watch. I also enjoy playing it when I do, but it's my favorite to watch because you have so many games. The openings are very interesting. The matches are very close, very interesting, very competitive.
Yes.
Goes to tiebreak, so you have that aspect. That's fun to do. But the first round is rarely interesting, honestly. I mean, okay, watch a bit, but there's not too many close matches. Was there anything like super unusual in the first round?
Not super unusual. I would highlight this one, Faustino. I will say Faustino instead of Faustino, even though I really like the way it sounds, Faustino. But I got so much shit in the comments the last time we covered one of his games. Faustino Oro defeated Berkic, a very strong grandmaster. I believe he was at his peak around 2650, so definitely a super solid grandmaster. He defeated him in the blitz portion, the blitz tiebreak. So definitely, at least from my perspective, a wild card 12-year-old to defeat such a seasoned grandmaster is somewhat of a surprise, despite the fact that, you know, right now their rating difference is not as high. It's about 100 rating points.
Yeah, no, I would also definitely highlight that one because he's so young and obviously he's so good, especially for his age. And, yeah, I can't really think of any younger players playing the World Cup. Maybe it happened. Probably not getting past the first round. And Berkic is a good grandmaster. He was probably about 2650 at his peak. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Roughly. It was a close match. You know, the kid is good, obviously. He's good. He's good in classical. I mean, also, he drew two games to Vidit.
Back and says, yes, it is. The players shake hands. It is a draw. And, well.
They were the most exciting games. He was better with black in the first game. Petered out to draw by repetition. Second game was basically without content. But still, Vidit is 2,700 plus, very seasoned guy who's been probably around 20.
He's a candidate. He's
2,750 roughly. He's been at the last candidates. I mean, he won the Grand Swiss. Yeah. He's a very good player. So to be basically playing an even match, even though it's still early, I mean, you know, two game match. It's not like we can read so much into it, but still, that's already quite significant. And he did play Vichy in a rapid blitz match. He took that to blitz stage. I mean, that was very close. So, look, Faustino is very good. It's really hard to doubt him at this stage.
What do you think is going to happen in tiebreaks? Hopefully, we're going to get this one out before tiebreaks begin tomorrow. You think he's going to take it, or you think Vidit is going to defend his pride, his local pride?
I mean, honestly, like in rapid, I would be really surprised. Because I just feel like in rapid, you know, usually the more experienced, stronger player takes it. And I still think that the difference between their levels should make itself felt. But I would put money on it for sure. I just don't know what odds I would give. I wouldn't give huge odds. I mean, I would give some odds. You know, and the winner of this will play Shankland. And
Shankland is in good form. 2-0 against Ivanchuk.
Yeah, Sam beat Vasily 2-0. Always helps when you win the first game with black, because then the second game with white, your opponent has to go nuts. Or they have to take risks, and very often that leads to a blowout. So, I really think that Vidit will win. I would give him probably around 80% to win. That's I could be proven wrong, of course. For the content, for the kid, we should be rooting for the kid. Sorry, Vidit. I mean,
excellent.
Vidit is a heavy favorite.
But you do think that Vidit is going to take it? Okay.
I think he's a heavy favorite.
Heavy favorite. That makes sense. Cool. All right. A few surprises. We do need to talk about this one. Wesley, your compatriot, our compatriot. I still play for Romania, so it's kind of half-half because I'm a citizen, but I also play for Romania, so it's kind of half-half compatriot. He lost against Strema Vicius. I would call this the biggest surprise, shock of round two of the World Cup. Not only because he lost, but because he resigned in a draw position. He just resigned in a draw position.
Look at him. No, he feels so sad. Oh! Oh,
no! No! No!
Oh, shit!
No, man!
I'm going to check this and he yaar. Will not.
Yaar.
Be able to sleep
yaar,
tonight, guys.
Wesley,
he resigned in a position where he had the draw in his hands.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Takes the moves. He's going to find the draw. He's going to be forced to find the draw. It's bishop against pawn endgames. It's very strange what happened. What's your explanation for that?
Well, yeah, it's... Of course, I was watching it live. And suddenly when like A4 happened and I didn't really understand why it's a draw. But I'm watching and the bar suddenly goes to draw. And I figured it has to probably be B4. I don't know why, I just thought it has to be B4. But I couldn't understand why. And only later Then, like, yeah, at some since I knew it was a draw, then after a few minutes of thought, I saw that, yeah, it has to be H1. But you have to consider H1. You just have to consider it, which...
Correct.
I don't know, can you blame someone for not considering it? I mean, it's very hard to say. Because if you don't consider it, you don't consider it. Like, what do you want the guy to do? I mean, it's not like he... If you don't consider H1, then it's perfectly reasonable to resign because you kind of just lose your pawns and that's it. The funny thing is that he played B4, right? Which is like...
He did.
Basically, when A4 happened, I'm looking at the screen and Wesley is absolutely dejected. He obviously looks like he's sure he's going to lose. Like, it's the game's over, basically. Which, technically, it was the move before. Although it was... If you can't play A4, it gets a bit more tricky, right? This trick with H1 obviously gives Black some opportunities to hold this. Now, if someone doesn't consider at all the move H1 and doesn't know that they're drawing, I mean, of course, if you told him it's a draw, I mean, he'll understand that he can't draw by going backwards with his king. He has to go forwards. And then after king F4, I mean, like, he has to play, like, king G4... King e3, king h4, king f4, like, you have to play h1, right? I mean, you can't let go of your pawn. So if you tell him it's a draw, obviously he finds it very quickly. Probably, like, immediately, just by elimination. He sees, oh, okay, king goes to g1 and stalemate. It's a miracle. Miracles do happen. Very rarely, but this is a study. It's a study, basically. It's a stalemate from nowhere. The king is in the center of the board, Black's king, and suddenly it's stalemated on G1, out of nowhere.
Yep.
But if you don't consider it and you think you're lost, now then the question from a player's point of view, like if you're a player, what do you do in this situation? How do you teach yourself to think it's not a loss? I don't know, honestly, because it's very often... Like, you could train yourself all you want, but at the board, if you think you're losing, you're losing. I mean, what do you want to do? Right?
It's very similar to the game between Shankland and... Was it Anish? I think it was Anish, right? Where Shankland just resigned in a drawish position.
Okay, that was significantly more silly because that was just a very well-known position. Like,
you think
honestly,
that was... Okay.
Oh, not even close. I mean, that was... For the viewers, okay, it was 2019 Tata Steel. I think 2019... basically, it's a complex position, but Black has a way to forcibly trade off all the pieces until the following position occurs. Black has a king on d7 or c8, wherever, and a pawn on b7. And White has a pawn on b6, a dark squared bishop, and a king on c5, d5, wherever. And this is a draw because Black just plays d7, c8, d7, c8 with the king. And if White ever plays king e6, then stalemate. It's a draw if you go in the corner with the king. It's a draw with the king on c8. It's not a draw if the king is, like, let's say on g6 or something. But because then it's not in the right place to get stalemate. But that's, like, everyone knows that fortress.
Yep.
It's just, like, you could add pawns on a6, a5. You could add pawns on c6, c5. The fortress is a fortress. It's basically the same as king on a8. White has pawn on a6 and bishop on dark squares. Like, everyone who... Because it's not a fortress that you have to think about. It's just like you know it, and then you just remember it. It's not a fortress. It's just a stalemate trick. You have to consider stalemate, basically. Which, if you do a study, the first thing you think is, oh, stalemate. Any study. Stalemate, stalemate, stalemate. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But... In a game, you don't really think it's a study. You're playing a game. I don't know. Of course, I think it's kind of 50-50. Like, if you keep hope, then you can make a draw here. If you don't keep hope, then you convince yourself it's lost. Then the resigning is about as logical a move as king f6 or king h5, king f4, king g6. Like, any move which doesn't play h1. It's kind of a psychological thing in some sense. Like, you just have to think.
It must be a psychological thing at that point.
Yeah. But of course, psychological things are the toughest. I mean, you have to think.
Yeah.
you know, I'm fighting for my life here. I mean, if someone told Wesley, you know, you lose this game, you're dead, then he would probably fight for his life, right? But people also just think it's just a game in some sense, right? It's not life or death. So I don't know. I'm kind of ranting a bit, but it's kind of psychology, I guess.
Yeah. So that was the shock. And the funny part is that probably none of the players realized it when the resignation came. It felt like they were just going through the motion of signing the score sheets, not even really chatting about it. Obviously, you know, the tension and the weight of the tournament is quite a lot, and not a lot of people are chatty after losing a match. But it felt like they were both kind of understanding that, yeah, this was the natural way of finishing. And probably 5 minutes later, Wesley finds out that it was just a simple draw. That was a huge, huge surprise and knocks out one of, I wouldn't call, well, maybe one of the favorites, actually, of the tournament. Now, another one was Nepo. Nepo losing against, let me see, who did he lose against?
He lost against Gosh Deep Tayan. I'm probably,
yes,
probably butchering the name, yes. But yeah.
And that's why I wanted to see it in writing, because I was going to butcher it also.
Look at Yanni resigns. What? There is nothing on the body, win.
Let's go!
Nepo!
Huge blunder with the white pieces out of the opening. Forgot about bishop a6 and bishop takes f2. Then basically tried to grovel to stay alive in the game. And Gosh just dismantled him, played very well, and converted his advantage. And he kicks him out. Nepo is going home, sort of with a little bit of complaint, saying that, you know, the conditions were not great. And I do have to agree with him from what I'm hearing from some of the competitors. And obviously, not everybody will come out with those things. But it does seem like the hotel is not in the best shape. I'm going to leave it at that. I do want to... I'm not going to give names because they might still be in the competition. But I did hear there's very regular instances of bed bugs, and that's one of the few things that are happening with the hotel. It's not in great shape, and I'm sure a lot of players have concerns, and they're not very happy about it. But while you're in the tournament, you simply don't allow yourself to think about these things. You try to solve them as best as you can and move on, because you have games to worry about. But it does seem like there are some problems there. So yeah, that's the situation with Nepo. Nepo goes home, and we do have some juicy matchups in the upcoming round.
Jan's mistake in the opening. I cannot. To me, this is more shocking than Wesley resigning. I mean, to play h3, honestly.
Just because he missed bishop takes f2, yeah.
I mean, okay, it's just like such a standard tactic. I mean, it shows up in so many lines. Like, I don't know. It's like really, really standard tactic. I mean, in Blitz, of course, you can blunder this, but I mean, he also thought for quite a while. Like, I don't know. Then okay, you get hit with bishop a6. It's kind of a shock. It's interesting because I saw like the interview of Gosh. And he said that Jan kind of responded instantly after bishop a6 with queen e1, but like the timer on chess.com shows like he thought 10 minutes. So but maybe he was kind of speaking instantly, but not literally instantly. But h3 is really a shock to me. I don't know. How do you miss bishop f2? It's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. No,
and it's such a critical game.
At that level,
it's the final game. Of course, it's actually like not so bad for White after bishop a6, bishop c4. But that's just that's just by pure luck. That pawn down, you kind of have decent drawing chances.
Yeah.
But then the rest of the game was pretty clinical from Gosh. I mean, he...
It was great. Yeah. No, he played well.
He played a very clean technical phase of that game. Queen d6, yes. Queen d6. It's probably not too... Like, the moves kind of flow naturally, so maybe it's not too difficult. But the moves flowing naturally actually shows that... Like, to me, that's a sign that Jan also didn't put up appropriate resistance.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this f4 was also pretty bad decision, but I don't know. It might already be very miserable for White after he... After he played queen d1.
Looking at the bracket, tell me what do you see? What do you see? Who do you think is going to... Who do you think is going to make it? Looking at the bracket and obviously seeing the first couple of rounds right now.
To the next round? Like, who's going to make it to the next...
No. Who's going to make it to the candidates? Give me your top three right now.
I don't know. It's tough because... Like, also, some of the people who could make it, they're already in the candidate, so it's, like, very, like, or they're world champion, like Gukesh, so it's, in that sense, it's not impossible that Anish, Gukesh, or technically Blue Bomb as well, could make it to the top three, and then you have some kind of different system, which I don't even know what's going on, right? Who's next? Yep. It goes to FIDE Circuit, but then there's also FIDE Circuit's a mess as well, so... if I'm not going to count Anish or Gukesh, and Wesley's out, Jan is out, Aravind is out, of course that still leaves a huge amount of great players. I think that it would not be crazy to say, like, Levon in this format has pretty good chances, as good as anyone can have, and also he's the only person in history who's won this tournament twice. And I think, besides winning twice, maybe he also got to a final once, but I might be wrong about that. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, he has a pretty serious pedigree.
He knows how to tournament. Win it. Yeah.
So
he knows how to win it.
I would probably pick. I can pick three people, right? That's okay. I'll pick Levon as one. I think that's. Then I think, like, logically, it would make sense. Of course, obviously, Gukesh and Anish make sense, but I'm not picking them because they're already in. Well, or they're world champion. Mm-hmm. It's going to be another repeat of the Grand Swiss where all my picks...
It's okay.
Of course, there could always be like an underdog who makes it. Now, who is good in a match?
I have one in mind.
I have
an underdog in mind for myself. You want me to take it first? Okay, I'll take my underdog. I'll just give you my underdog right now.
Sure.
Leko.
Okay. I mean, look, Peter is one of the greats. One of the greats of his generation. Played a world championship match. Mm-hmm. Tied the world championship match with Kramnik. He's not an active player.
He's not.
He hasn't played competitive chess in a long time.
He hasn't.
Besides, like, the, well, I don't know, European team or something once or recently. I mean, like, the guy was out of chess for years. Five years.
I'm
going
to have to go
at
with
least.
My fellow commentator. He's a fellow commentator. He has the pedigree. And he's showing good shape right now.
I'm not seeing it. I'm sorry.
Look, he's a very tough to beat guy. I see that he has Arjun in his bracket. First of all, Alexenko in the next round, that's tough. If he goes past that, somewhat likely that he's going to face Arjun, and after that, perhaps he's...
Look, I mean, it's not impossible. Of course, he has all the class in the world.
It's tough.
You cannot find a classier player.
Yes.
But the guy it's a month-long tournament. He'll have to play an entire month long. He's nearly 50 years old. He hasn't played competitive chess for years. Although I'm sure that he has worked on chess actively. But still, to me, that's a massive long shot. Okay,
my second pick.
No, I should... Or you want to go with two in a row?
Go ahead. No, no, no. Well, you took Levon, and who else did you take? Did you take another one? I think you have another one, right?
Yeah, let me see who. First, let me make sure they're not out yet. First up. I think I have to go near the top, though.
Okay.
And you know what? I'm going to go Richie. He's on a roll recently.
I was going to pick Richie as well. Yes.
Okay.
I like that pick.
We can share
no,
Richie.
No, I'm not going to share it. I'm not going to share it. I'm going to try to fight you on that. Because you get Richie, and obviously he's a good pick. I like that pick as well. But I don't see it in his bracket, but perhaps later on he could be meeting him. MVL.
I was thinking about Maxime.
MVL.
Oh, I was thinking about it.
Yes.
I just thought people would be like, oh, you're just picking the Grand Chess Tour. Because what I picked Maxime and Levon in Prague. Oh, you just picked the Grand Chess Tour finalists.
Did you pick Prague as well?
No, but if I had gone that route. No, I didn't. I'm not picking Prague. Because in my mind, Prague is qualified through the FIDE circuit.
Correct.
So he's like Anish for me. He's an untouchable. He's in the candidates.
Okay. Untouchable.
Yeah.
Okay, who's your next one? The final pick.
Okay, I'm going to say it's between Vincent and Arjun for me. I'm picking one of them. I'm going to go Arjun.
Fair enough.
I don't know.
I'm going to pick Vincent.
Yeah, they're both very, very good. I mean, what to say? They both could make it for sure.
They both have decent chances. With Vincent.
They both won 2-0.
Yes.
Which doesn't mean much, but still, it's a good start.
I mean, Vincent is on such a roll right now. I think he's what, number 5 in the world or something like that. Obviously, he's been tearing through the competition. Definitely feeling good, and he's motivated. He wants that candidate spot. He barely missed it at the Grand Swiss. I think he's making a good claim that that he deserves it, and that's going to fuel him. So I'm going to pick Vincent. You want to switch?
Yeah.
Or do you want to get an additional one?
No, I'm leaving Arjun. I'm taking Hans.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can see it. I can see it happening.
But Hans still has to pass this round. He's 1-1 against Lorenzo.
That's
Nodici
true.
From
like
Italy.
That's true. By statistically, of course, I'm not getting the best one, right? I mean, I could be proven wrong literally tomorrow.
I like it.
But I really think he's going to win that. Yeah, I mean, against Lodici in Rapid, I think he's like a 90% probably to win. And beyond that, who knows? But I don't see why he has significantly worse chances than any of the other guys. I mean, slightly worse chances, sure, but definitely not significantly worse chances. I mean, he's good in Rapid. He has some match experience. Yeah, you know, he could make. I mean, Arjun's a better pick, but I'm going with my compatriot Hans.
Okay,
so
we'll
have
take some risks occasionally.
We'll have
in life,
what
huh?
three Americans in the camp. Oh well, if I pick Levon and Hans, then I'm just going American all the way. So it's gonna have four Americans because Hikaru's making it in the candidates. So four Americans in the candidates.
That's going to be this another U.S. Championships. Yeah, excellent. Beautiful. Fabio, I think we're done with this episode. Quite revealing and quite filled with information, I would say, this one. Had a lot of fun chatting about all of these interesting topics. Until next time, and I'm sure we'll have much more clarity the next time we chat about the World Cup. So with that in mind, thank you all for watching. Thank you for supporting the channel. Like, subscribe, you know, all the good stuff so that we continue growing and we continue bringing you this type of content and this type of high-level information from one of the best players in history and myself as well. So cheers. Until the next one, have a good day and enjoy. Bye.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.